this particular case. And since we have students here, we've got some ninth graders from, I guess it's high school now, instead of junior high school. When I went to school 100 years ago, it was called junior high, but now ninth graders are in high school. I'm going to ask the attorney just to tell quickly what the case is about, so they won't be surprised, and that way they won't have to tell us about the facts. Go ahead, counsel. We have Mr. McCoy for the appellant, and Mr. Rons for the respondent. Tell the students.
This case is my client is the manufacturer of luxury motorhomes. And the plaintiffs who are here in court today purchased one of those motorhomes and had some problems with it. So this case concerns whether or not they can force us to buy back the motorhome from them, in essence.
And you did not prevail in the district court, is that correct?
That's correct. Our opponents prevailed in the district court, and the court issued an order asking this court to revisit portions of that decision.
Mr. Bounce, what about your side? You prevailed in the district court.
Yeah, we prevailed in the district court. That really is the facts of the case. It's my client's purchased an RV for their retirement. It broke down time and time and time again. And finally, after a couple of years, approximately 20 months, they finally asked the manufacturer to take it back. And kind of a legal issue that seems to be part of this is whether you can ask the manufacturer to take that product. So that's kind of what we're here to argue about today.
Well, thank you, Mr. McCoy and Mr. Bounce, for explaining this to the students. And students, this is the first case you heard was a criminal case, and this is a civil case that was resolved in the district court, and then the appeal was taken to us. Mr. McCoy, ready?
Morning, Your Honor. Robert McCoy for the appellant, Newmar Corporation. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes, if I may. We're asking you today to overturn two components of the district court's judgment against Newmar. One component is the district court's judgment asserting that Newmar is liable for the plaintiff, Mrs. McCrary's revocation claim. And the second component of the judgment that we'd like you to revisit today is the component of the judgment that awards them their attorney's fees. And I'll take those in that order. First, on the revocation claim, there's very good reason to reverse the district court's judgment holding Newmar liable for the revocation claim, and that reason is grounded in the new Uniform Commercial Code. And Section 2608 of the Uniform Commercial Code, which is the portion of the code that prevents a revocation claim, states that a buyer can only revoke acceptance against a quote-unquote seller. So the issue we're asking you to decide today is whether or not Newmar is a seller within the context of that provision of the code.
Counsel, isn't there some, I'll use the term split of authority as that issue, based upon particular facts? And I guess one of the facts that's being asserted was that during the sale process, there was someone there from Newmar who made representations, even though the deal was partially done.
Correct, Your Honor. That is Mrs. McCrary's argument is that that is in fact the case. The record shows that the sale was consummated and the unit was delivered on August 31st, 2008. And the portion of the record is 1560 to 1587, showing that she signed on that date a number of documents acknowledging purchase, transfer of title, receipt of delivery. In fact, also on that date, she also insured the motorhome in her name and at her expense, effective August 31st, 2005, and she also signed a lease agreement permitting her to leave the motorhome at the dealership.
Is that acceptance prior to the comments by the person from Newmar as to standing behind the product?
That was a full week prior to her interaction with anybody from Newmar. So it was September 5th, 2005, that she first met and encountered Mark Enfield, who was a Newmar factory representative. So a full week before, we have a sale that was not partially consummated, but the record reflects that the sale was fully consummated and that she had received transfer of title from the dealer on that date.
Wasn't there some representation, though, to Newmar? Wasn't there a call log that indicated that there was a concern that the sale would be lost?
There was no representations between Newmar and the purchaser, Mrs. McCrary. There is,
I'm talking about between Wheeler and Newmar.
There was some correspondence between Wheeler and Newmar, but those representations never reached, and there's no allegation that those representations ever reached the plaintiff, so it's not a representation upon which the plaintiff could rely to suggest that Newmar was involved in the sale that was consummated on August 31st.
Was one of the documents on August 31st a warranty from Newmar?
That's correct, Your Honor. A limited component warranty from Newmar. It was not the only warranty that was issued to Mrs. McCrary. It was one of several, but that was likewise consummated on August 31st, a full week before she met and had any discussion.
Now, was there discussion in the trial court that there was a bumper-to-bumper warranty that was relied on by the plaintiffs in this case?
It was not a bumper-to-bumper warranty, Your Honor, in the record.
There's no representation whatsoever in the record that would support that.
No, Mr. Encode's representation, and the record reflects that Mr. Encode's representation, that any problems they had with the motorhome that they complained of, and they had a handful of specific complaints that they made to him, he said the factory will take care of those. And none of those are asserted to have fallen with outside Newmar warranty, which fairly covers a large portion of the motorhome, but not the entirety of it. It's not a bumper-to-bumper warranty. The record reflects, for example, that the chassis was warrantied by the manufacturer of the chassis, and that other individual components were warrantied directly by their manufacturer as well.
There is an interesting issue to follow on to Justice Douglas's question to you. After, if you accept your point that the deal was closed on the 31st, there were some intervening problems with the coach that caused Newmar's representative to be brought into the transaction. I don't know whether those problems rose to the level of giving Ms. McCrary the opportunity to revoke acceptance 6 days into the mission, but arguably she could have, and she was reassured. What do you do with those facts in the context of the minority positions that have considered applying this against manufacturers?
In that, we looked at the record, Your Honor, and the record is the testimony at trial was that the issues that were complained of in the first week were merely cosmetic, and that's a direct quote from the testimony of Mr. McCrary at trial. They were issues to deal with things like the curtain rods and some paint issues, not the curtains, and some paint issues. They were not issues that went to the operation or safety of the motorhome, so they certainly didn't rise anywhere near the level.
In something serious enough to cause Wheeler to communicate with Newmar that the sale's in jeopardy. What did Wheeler tell Newmar that caused them to think that? I understand your point that those communications weren't conveyed to the McCrarys, but I don't think reliance is part of this issue under the Uniform Commercial Code. The question is the degree to which these problems existed in the 6 days after this closed that might give rise to a new revocation theory or a revocation theory.
Again, the problems that were transmitted to Newmar and that were discussed with Wheeler were not mechanical or safety problems. They were what I would call these minor, for lack of a better term, nitpicking problems. And so when the
council engine check light?
How about flood? I think there was some lighting problems, some headlight problems that they had when they were on a trip somewhere on the east side of our country. I think that's probably not nitpicky, at least not in my mind, when you have a rainstorm and you need your lights.
And those occurred, the record reflects that those occurred only after the discussion with Newmar's factory representative, who was not sent there to deal with this sale or to deal with these problems, who the record reflects, and Mr. McCrary, by his own admission at trial, admits was there by happenstance. He happened to be on site that day, and he happened to be there. So the record doesn't suggest that Newmar sent out its representative to deal with these problems and quote-unquote save the sale. In fact, the record's a lot more moderate on those points at this point, at this time period we're talking about, in the first weeks of when the sale was consummated, in the first week after when they drove it off.
I didn't have time to look at the communications between, or the record as it relates to the communications between Wheeler and Newmar in that 6-day period, and I was going to ask both counsel to either tell me their view of that or cite me to record sites so I could find it?
I can cite you to the record site, Your Honor. It is indeed in the call log. And for context, the call log is a conglomeration of notes that the customer service department at Newmar receives. So these are not, this is not legal correspondence, it's not official correspondence, it's a clerk's notes of a telephone call that is received in their impression of that telephone call. So to, I don't want to suggest that, I don't want to allow the impression to be conveyed that the call log, that these communications or the record of these communications is somehow overarching or broad. Indeed, it's one line, one entry of a multi-page call log. I don't have the site handy right now, but I certainly will when I stand up here.
It's a Newmar business record.
Correct? That's correct, Your Honor. But if we look at the span of jurisdictions that deal with claims of the sort asserted against Newmar here today, even under the facts of this case, and even under the record of this case, we do not have courts allowing a plaintiff or a buyer to assert revocation liability against a manufacturer when they did not buy that coach, when they did not buy that item from the manufacturer. There's 26 states that have taken up this issue in published decisions from an appellate, a supreme, or a federal court. And of those 26 states, 21 roundly adopt the view that we're urging on the court today, that the definition of a seller in the Uniform Commercial Code is limited to the party who transmits title to the buyer. The record in this case is undisputed that that party is Wheeler, not Newmar. The record is undisputed that Newmar transmitted title to Wheeler. The motorhome was titled in Wheeler's name, owned by Wheeler, fully paid for by Wheeler, to Newmar, and then in a separate transaction transmitted to the plaintiffs. There are five jurisdictions where there are cases going the other way and ultimately allowing a buyer to assert liability against the manufacturer as opposed to the selling dealer. None of those five cases are a substantial enough peg onto which you should affirm the district court's decision, and here's why. One of them, Vermont, was based on the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act, a federal claim that grants a buyer bringing that sort of claim a revocation remedy in a warranty action. That claim has not been asserted in this case, and that has nothing to do with this case. So the Vermont case is out. We're down to four jurisdictions. Two other jurisdictions, North Dakota and Minnesota, only allowed revocation against the manufacturer because the dealer that actually sold the item was insolvent and out of business. And they stated as much in their rationale. And that was the basis for their holding. So now we're down to two jurisdictions. One is Mississippi, and the other relied on Mississippi. And Mississippi is the genesis of the Volkswagen case that the district court relied on in denying summary judgment to my clients on this issue, to Newmar on this issue. But the problem with relying on the Volkswagen case out of Mississippi, and the Mississippi case is treating the subject, is this. The warranty at issue in the Volkswagen case was an exclusive bumper-to-bumper warranty. It was a car. This is not an exclusive warranty, nor is it a bumper-to-bumper warranty. That was also a repair and replace warranty, and this is a repair warranty. So we have substantively different warranties.
But isn't there a component here? I guess I'm going back to that same point that the Newmar representative injected himself into this whole sales process and gave assurances to save sale.
If we're going to rely...
So it's a unique component, I think, in this particular case.
But it's not, Your Honor, for this reason, because the record reflects that as a legal matter, the sale was consummated on August 31. If contract law is to mean anything in Nevada, it means that these contracts that she signed on that date mean what they say, which is that the sale was completed and the motorhome was purchased and delivered and owned by her. And it was only thereafter that Newmar came into the picture, and any representations or work by Newmar came into the picture. So that distinction is a short one temporally, but it's an important one legally. Because if I sign a contract that says X, Y, and Z, I should expect that contract to be enforced as such.
What about the offer of judgment?
On the offer of judgment, Your Honor,
Oh, I'm sorry.
I just was going to finish the subject area. I'm sorry. I was wondering if counsel could distinguish Shivers, the Texas Supreme Court case. You had evaluated other states. What is your position about Shivers?
I will be honest, Your Honor, standing here right now, I do not recall the facts of Shivers, but I will save myself a minute for rebuttal and address that question for you if you don't mind waiting a few minutes.
Oh, sure.
Offer judgment. They made an offer of judgment for $600,000 before trial. They won a trial just over $400,000. Their offer of judgment said nothing about return of the motorhome, and they're now claiming that it contemplated the return of the motorhome. That's irrelevant because at trial, we have to buy back the motorhome anyways. There is no other law, provision, or contract provision or statute that would permit the award of attorney's fees in this case. So we have their offer of judgments for $600,000, and they claim we get the motorhome back, and we have a judgment at trial for just over $400,000, 50% less, and we get the motorhome back. There is absolutely no basis in law for the award of attorney's fees, just like we think there's no basis in law.
So they can only get costs, they can't get attorney's fees.
That's correct, Your Honor. And the $107,000 in change in attorney's fees should absolutely be vacated. We also think that Nevada law compels you to vacate the revocation claim as well. And with that, I'll save my last remaining minute to address Justice Hardesty's question on rebuttal, if I may.
And I'll give you an extra 2 minutes, and I'll give respondent 17 minutes. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I'll give you an extra two. You have 17 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court, my name is Kurt Bonds. I represent the McCrarys in this matter. I'm going to deal with the four issues that the Court submitted to us to discuss, and I'll just do them in the order. The first issue is, should the Court limit revocation in cases where the manufacturer makes promises to the consumer? Answer, no. It should not limit in this case. We have lots of different areas of law that requires when a party makes a representation that they are then bound by that representation. You can't go back and then undo what you said. We have the doctrine of equitable estoppel, which basically says when you voluntarily act and make a affirmative, maybe it's a representation or a misrepresentation, you can't then go back and ask the court to save you from those misrepresentations. We have the doctrine of detrimental reliance in contractual situations. When you make a statement or a representation to somebody and they detrimentally rely on that statement, you can't then go back and undo it. You're bound by that representation.
But your lawsuit's not based on those theories.
No, I understand that, Your Honor. What I'm saying is it's just sort of the policy that we're talking about is should this court limit it in a revocation claim when the manufacturer specifically makes a representation to the consumer?
Well, I was getting
consumer.
Confused. Your lawsuit is based upon the Uniform Commercial Code.
It is.
Okay.
And it's a revocation claim.
So aren't we required to interpret the statute under which you brought the claim, regardless
Absolutely.
Of policy considerations under other theories of relief?
Absolutely. I'm just trying to give an overview of it's consistent with other areas of the law that would be...
Even the five or six states that take a position opposite of the majority rule do not adopt policy positions based upon other theories of recovery.
That's true.
Their policy positions are focused on consumer relationships to the manufacturer and the seller, right?
That's right. And their policy considerations under the UCC and the Nevada Chapter 104 of it's to be remedies are to be liberally construed in favor of the aggrieved party. And so there is that overlying, and I'm going to get to that in a second. I guess I just wanted to overall indicate that there's a policy in the law that you can't make a representation and then go back and say, well, we didn't mean it or we shouldn't be bound by it. In this case, Newmark did make many representations. They represented that they would fix it. My client, Mr. McCray, testified that they promised him a bumper-to-bumper warranty. He was in the car business. He dealt with them on the sale. They were ready to walk. They were ready to walk because they were concerned about this coach. This is a $385,000 coach that they're purchasing for their retirement, and it has a check engine light on.
I guess that's my question, too, and maybe you can clear this up for me. They indicated Kyle was already transferred by the time the Newmar representative came into the picture.
The documents were signed on the 31st of October. My clients hadn't taken possession of the coach yet. It was left at Newmar to do this inspection to fix what they did, a pre-delivery inspection, and it was
additional on those matters.
Exactly. And my clients were upset when they then got there. They tried to test drive it or drive it, and the check engine light's on, and the step didn't go down properly. Those are all electrical functions, and as we have seen in the history of this coach, this is an electrical nightmare. I mean, this thing was terrible from the get-go. Mr. Clark, so they made those representations at the time of the sale. The other representation that's very important, I believe, in this case is my clients were dealing only with Newmar.
Counsel, this is part of the problematic thing, is that Wheeler was originally a party to this, and they were let out on summary judgment.
That's right.
And they had the buy-sell contract.
They were let out. The court let them out because, to be honest, my clients did not revoke against Wheeler. They didn't have any contact with Wheeler. Because Newmar said, we're the ones to take care of it. We will take care of it. They took the lead on everything. So every repair, every discussion, everything was with Newmar. It wasn't with Wheeler. Newmar made promises to them, they went to Newmar back in 2007 after 20 months, and Newmar says, and my clients, Mr. McCray says, who do I go to talk about getting this thing back?
Mr. Bonson, your complaint and any amendments there too, what causes of action did you assert against Newmar?
There's a breach of warranty, breach of contract, revocation, claim for revocation. I believe those were the three that stood. And so at the time, my clients were asking, who do we go to? Newmar says, let me find out who you go to revoke. Makes a call, goes back to Mr. McCray and says, you have to go to Consumer Affairs. Consumer Affairs is the people that you got to deal with for a revocation claim. So he does. Mr. Klotz is the head of Consumer Affairs, and that's who he deals with. He testified, I make decisions on revocation. I just didn't feel it was appropriate in this case. So my clients were relying on their representations of, hey, we're the ones you got to come to, and then at trial, it's a different story. So that brings me to the second issue as to why the court, why this court should take the majority or the minority position. That was the issue. I'm not sure you have to take either, just because this case is so factually different than every other case. Every other case that I've read and looked at, there really was no involvement with the manufacturer. It was you bought it from a seller, you dealt with the seller, you went to the seller for repairs, it just didn't happen, and then either the seller was insolvent or for some other reason, then you go after the manufacturer as well. In this case, it's very different. Newmar makes affirmative representations that they are the party to deal with on the revocation issue, and they're the ones who've been dealing with the consumers or the McCurrys the entire time. As the court found, but for Newmar's representations at the time of the sale, this sale would not have gone forward. They were concerned. They were ready to walk. And Newmar's own log, which is a business record, indicates, hey, we're afraid we're going to lose this sale. And so Newmar even paid for shipping of parts to come in and fix this coach prior to the sale being finished or completed. And so they certainly were afraid to lose this sale. Newmar rep, he was on site. He injected himself into the sales process prior to taking delivery, and the court basically found, based on substantial evidence, that Newmar was a seller. This was fully briefed. This wasn't just at trial. This was briefed in pretrial motions. Newmar filed a motion for reconsideration. It was briefed again. We had two separate sets of oral argument on this issue. So it wasn't like this was kind of a new thing.
The summary judgment was granted in favor of Wheeler. I assume there's no 54B because it was still pending as to Newmar.
That's right.
So eventually, what's the status of Wheeler? Was that settled or was it?
They were let out. The problem with Wheeler was we simply had no, we didn't revoke against Wheeler. We didn't. Mr. McCrary, they went to Newmar because that's who they were told to go to.
So when you won the case against Newmar and the judge entered final judgment, that would, the appeal time would run as to Wheeler. At that time, you decided not to appeal as to Wheeler.
Basically, we felt we had no cause of action against him because we didn't actually put a revocation in writing to Wheeler. But, so other reasons that other courts, and I'm sure the court's aware of, but they found that when the sales contract and the warranty is so closely linked that they blend at the time of sale, that's a reason to hold the manufacturer liable. The Ford Motor case in Arkansas indicates that you need to apply the code liberally to promote relief. In that case, the seller was no longer around. The Waddell case, which is a Nevada case, the policy behind that one is the inability to correct a defect is a major hardship and unacceptable economic burden on the consumer. I would submit that that is this case as well. Newmar gets a benefit. They get a benefit when it's sold, whether they want to act like they don't or not, because they're then selling to Wheeler or whoever else sells their product. So I believe the policy is a good one to take the view of the that you can revoke against a manufacturer, and particularly in this case with these sets of facts. And that's what the liberal administration of the code would call for. The third issue that the court had sent out was whether Newmar's defense could be unreasonable if there's a split in jurisdiction. And I would submit to your honors that there's four reasons why Newmar's defense was unreasonable in this case. Number one, the position that they took in the case was directly contrary to what their representations were to my clients. They represented that they were the ones to whom you would revoke a trial. They took a completely different stance.
But isn't the standard different when you're looking at unreasonable defense in this case and maintaining or participating in action that doesn't really have any merit? There's a split of authority on revocation.
That's true.
So what's the argument?
Well, the argument is a couple of reasons, and let me get to the reasons, and hopefully I'll answer that question. I think it's definitely against what they represented. Secondly, early on in the case, they were deemed to be a seller, and so there really is no split in case law in terms of as to a seller. And so they maintain those defenses continually that they should be held liable, even though they were specifically found to be a co-seller because they injected themselves into the sales process like we've talked about. And under Waddell, there's clearly they should have revoked if they're a seller or accepted revocation. July of 2000, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals rules that Nevada would rule what you would do, apparently. They ruled that you could revoke against the manufacturer in the Erickson case. Interesting about the Erickson case is Newmar was the defendant in that case. So they knew, at least what the Ninth Circuit said, that...
Was Newmar involved in the sales in that particular case? Since you're citing it, I'm asking the question.
No, it doesn't appear to be. It doesn't appear to be. It's not in the record that they injected themselves into the sales process. So they fought this issue before, and my clients could have avoided this whole case had they said, go to Wheeler. My clients would have written a letter to Wheeler. They would have CC'd them on it. Take it back.
They have a fundamental problem of if we decide they're not the seller and put this under the bumper-to-bumper warranty, isn't there an issue as to how the damages should flow?
I suppose so, but the problem is, Your Honors, is this thing has ruined 5 years of their retirement life. And yes, there could be an argument that the damages are, well, you know, if we fix it, it's okay. And then how do you deal with the 5 years of lost enjoyment of a retirement? How do you deal with the 5 years of hassle of every time you're going on a trip, you're in the south in the summertime without air conditioning, you're in the northwest or the northeast in a rainstorm trying to get home at night? I don't know how you deal with those issues to fairly compensate the McCrary's for the loss. Really, the way to put them back whole is to require Newmar to revoke or to accept the revocation and pay for the coach. That's all they've ever asked for. In fact, they asked for that before the suit was filed. There was testimony. They said that they'd pay for an upgrade, a better model, just pay the difference. But Newmar didn't want that for whatever reason.
Can you address the cost and attorney's fees issue in the offer of judgment in this case?
Yes. One more thing I want to say on the unreasonable defense is they actually argued that this coach was not substantially impaired its value, which to me was just they brought three experts to trial saying that the value of this coach was not substantially impaired. Every trip ruined. We talked about the rainstorm with no headlights. They talked about the heat with no air conditioning in the south. The fact that they argued that was, in my mind, it was an unreasonable argument to say that this coach was not value impaired. In terms of the fourth issue, I see I have about 3 minutes, was whether the return of the vehicle could have been included in the offer of judgment if it must be conditional, which I think is the attorney's fee issue. I would submit to Your Honors, to properly evaluate the offer and to evaluate it fairly, you have to look at the return of the vehicle. And the reason why is because we went to mediation with Newmar. They knew, everybody knew it was contemplated they were going to return this vehicle. My clients do not want this vehicle. They feel unsafe. They didn't want to sell it to anybody else because they don't want somebody else to inherit the headache. They've known from the mediations, from every negotiations, every discussion, take it back. The action for revocation by its very nature is you've got to take it back. The court obviously took it into consideration. To be quite candid, our motion for attorney's fees was based not primarily on the offer of judgment, but based on 18010, because we felt like in the court's, in NRS 18 basically states that the court should liberally construe in favor of awarding fees in all appropriate circumstances. And the reason behind that is the courts don't want to hinder the timely resolution of meritorious claims. That's what's going to happen here. If we get stuck with the attorney's fees, Newmar's going to have every incentive to never accept a revocation, to drag it out, where lots of consumers won't be able to incur those costs that my clients were able to incur.
But the judge awarded, I just reread the order, under the offer of judgment. So
she did.
She didn't award it under bad faith, under 18010.
No, she granted our motion. Our motion initially was under NRS 18.
Right, but she granted it on the offer of judgments. I think the follow-up of Justice Paragrave said we kind of have to evaluate it under the offer of judgment standards. And my concern, Mr. Bonds, is if Newmar had accepted this $600,000 cash offer, you would have entered a judgment for $600,000 against them pursuant to the acceptance of the offer of judgment, and they would have had to write you a check for $600,000. I mean, that's the way it works.
They would have got the coach back. We
right.
That's right.
Theoretically, you wouldn't have to give it back, you know, like that.
And I understand.
I understand what the negotiations were. And all right. That's you know, that's the concern I have on that.
Right.
Am I misreading Judge Vega's order where it says defendant Newmar's offered settlement amount was very low and not in good faith?
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like we're talking about two different offers.
Well, there was an offer of judgment. They made a very low offer of judgment, and I don't think their offer of judgment is relevant in any way, shape, or form because they didn't do a motion for attorney's fees. That's the only reason why you have an offer of judgment, or where it becomes.
Well, this order was either prepared by Mr. McCoy, the one that I'm reading, unless I mean.
No, you're absolutely right. I'll be honest, I was a bit confused on the reasoning, but. I think there's multiple reasons, if you don't mind to finish the thought, there's multiple reasons why the attorney's fee should be awarded. Policy reasons are part of it, but it's also under NRS 18 as well as the offer of judgment, if you look at it with the value of the coach in mind.
Well, you did say it was not in good faith.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you. Mr. McCoy, were you able to find the call log before I use
it? I will, Your Honor, and I wish to correct the record on that point, on a couple of other words, and if I may lead off before I get to the call log on the point you just addressed with Mr. Bonds,
right.
Which was Judge Vega's attorney's fees orders.
Right.
That is her rationale. I put words to paper, indeed, with her rationale, and the lack of appropriate rationale in that order is exactly the reason you should reverse the attorney's fees. She was construing our offer of judgment, which was not accepted, which was therefore not at issue, when she should not have. The trigger is their offer of judgment. They didn't beat it. End of discussion. We don't talk about Beatty or any other factors. Mr. Bonds brought up 18.
What was the order of the offers of judgment? I had a case called Albios, which that was a big issue.
Theirs first, rejected by us sending in a competing offer.
So yours was the last offer?
That's correct.
Well, Space Coast and Albios.
It's a different party.
Mm. Okay.
We'll have to think about that one, Mr. Quick.
Go ahead. On NRS 18010, he says we maintain unreasonable defenses. There were 10 claims asserted against Newmar. This will correct the record on a question that was asked by you, Justice Gibbons. 10 claims asserted against Newmar, 5 by Mrs. McCreary, 5 identical claims by Mr. McCreary. There was a consumer fraud claim, and there was a lemon law claim that Mr. Bonds didn't discuss.
And they were sent under the consumer fraud?
We won a trial on consumer fraud. We defeated all of Mr. McCreary's claims, all 5. We won at trial on consumer fraud and at summary judgment on lemon law. 7 of 10 claims we won on. The revocation claim, a split of authority, otherwise we wouldn't be here. Unreasonable does not come anywhere into the equation. On the call logs that just both you, Justice Cherry, and you, Justice Hardesty, asked about, here are the call logs that show in appendix page 1533. The notation about losing the sale is Newmar's employee recording the words conveyed by Wheeler when they needed a motor for the automatic curtains over the dinette shipped quickly. They wanted it overnight shipped from Newmar to Wheeler, a motor for the automatic curtains. And she said, why do you want overnight shipping? Presumably because of the cost involved. And the comment was transmitted by Wheeler, because we are about to lose the sale, and that's on 1533 of the call log, and that is in the entirety of the record about losing the sale. The shipping cost for a motorized dinette curtain. The final point I wish to correct the record on is this, the revocation claim. Mr. Bonds would stand up here and say, he is suggesting that somehow we had some duty to tell the McCrarys to whom they should assert their revocation claim. That sounds to me like a legal malpractice claim being asserted to us. The revocation claim was made by an attorney. The McCrarys engaged an attorney. That attorney was not Mr. Bonds. It was Joshua Landish. And he sought revocation against Newmar, but not against Wheeler. The errors and omissions of an attorney are chargeable to the client and are not chargeable to us. And I have one more sentence to conclude, Your Honor, if you may indulge me for a few seconds.
I will do that for you.
One of the two parties in this appeal came to court today with relevant, on-point authorities, both from Nevada and elsewhere, supporting their position. The only two cases that the McCreary cited today are Waddell and Erickson. Waddell is squarely in our court. It is a case from Your Honors a couple of years ago allowing and permitting revocation against the dealer, not the manufacturer. Erickson is the only case that they've cited to that would permit revocation against the manufacturer, Newmar. That was an unpublished decision out of the Ninth Circuit, and in that unpublished decision that was one page and had no analysis, the Ninth Circuit did say this: we do this with great reservation about allowing revocation against a manufacturer, not a seller, and that is enough to sink that case and sink its reliability for Your Honors.
Well, Mr. McCoy, thank you. Mr. Bonds, thank you. I think the students are very impressed with this spirited argument. You can see that even in a case involving a recreational vehicle, that the attorneys are really involved in this, and they did a good job. Thank you very much for doing this for the students. And this case will stand submitted. And I appreciate the fact the students were here. I hope you enjoyed it. Give my regards to Rabbi Harlig, and have a wonderful day. And, Counsel, thank you so much for participating with these students in this case. We'll stay in the recess until tomorrow at 10 o'clock. Submitted.